Father in heaven, thank you that you're willing to teach us, that you're willing to give us wisdom and knowledge and understanding. And we sure need that, and we ask that you'd teach us this afternoon. Thank you. Amen. Okay, we had a question right here about raised beds on concrete. Okay, if you can go to this page in your handouts, okay? Now, I've got some raised beds on concrete. And when we do that, I like that, because there's no gophers that can come through the concrete. But you have to have enough soil. So if you are doing that, I would suggest you have at least 18 inches above. At least 18 inches of soil, and then you will get some good produce there. You're still not going to get 100 pounds of tomatoes, because a tomato plant can go down 10 feet there in the ground. Yes. How is that going to drain? Okay. How I do it, mine are about this high, and in the bottom of that bed, I have a layer of gravel. Okay. And so it can drain through that and then out onto the concrete. Otherwise, you may have a problem of too much water buildup there. But this is just the opposite. And you have to make sure in the summertime when it's hot and dry, you have to make sure that it is watered. Yeah, there. Okay, let's go through this. The first thing on here is planting by the blueprint ebook. This is a book basically covers what we're covering today. And there are a lot of color photos in this. And at this point, it's an ebook. We're reworking it so that it will be a bound book there. That's not available today, so we won't take your money for a bound book today. You can put down that you want it when it's available, but you can get the ebook for $15. The Planting by the Blueprint workbook, the bound copy, is $50. Open the soil. Some of you have this already. This is one of Ellen White's. This is a compilation of Ellen White's writings on agriculture. A great book to have. So I go through my copy. I've got it all underlined, and seems like on every page they're just great material, great promises for us there. There's also a couple other books that have been written. John Deisinger has one. Then there's one called Green Print that David Obermiller put together. And they're all good, and they're all different. Anyway, I use all three of them. This is the only one I carry. That's a $16 book, and it's available out there if you want it. Okay. There's a DVD on tree planting. This is one that was made a few years ago. Planting by the Blueprint. And if you have this already, great. If you don't have it, you can get it. You can watch this on the internet for free. You can just watch it. If you want it, it is a $20 DVD. It's about an hour long there. There are some changes between this, between what we do now and when this was made. So if you have this or you look at this on the internet, make sure that you get the update to this. What you'll find is that some things disagree. So use the update with the things. If they disagree, go with the update. It's just two pages of printed material. Because of changes in agriculture and new things that we've learned, an update was necessary. Just as an example, when this was made, I was saying use cottonseed meal. We do not use cottonseed meal anymore. Cotton has been genetically modified. That wasn't the case back here. The cottonseed was really kind of a waste product, and the seed is very high in nitrogen and other nutrients. Do not use anything that is genetically modified. Besides that, because cotton is a food that we, a plant where we don't eat it, there are lots of poisons put out on cotton. And so you don't want that at all. Another thing is, just an, as an example, we used to say, take the air pipe. Say we want air in the ground. And so when you see that, we'll cover this more tomorrow on the, in tree planting. But when you put that air pipe down in the ground, we used to say put it in the bottom of the ground, bottom of that hole. You dig this deep hole and you put it in the bottom. What we find is that that layer of rock we put in there is a dividing between the aerobic and the anaerobic bacteria there. And so if you put that air pipe in the bottom, below that layer of rock, you're working against yourself. You're putting air down there where we want anaerobic bacteria. Okay? Now, the anaerobic and the aerobic both need the same things. They both need food, and they both basically need the same foods. But one is working without air, and the, and from the layer of rock up, we're working with air. It's the difference between those two that makes an electrical charge and helps that plant. It changes the electrical field in that planting hole, and it makes that tree grow much better. So put that layer, put that air pipe above the rock, and it'll work better for you there. The updates will, are in the book, and they are they're in here also. So if it if the update disagrees, use the update on it. Okay, then we have a full 7.5 hour class. Okay, this is professionally done, and most of the talks here I have John Frank, who is the owner of International Ag Labs, has a couple of on here too. They're good talks. This is professionally done and edited, and so you can put this on and you can turn to any chapter that you want. If you wanted to know about ocean water, you can go right there. If you wanted to go the Ellen White tree planting, you could go right there. If you wanted to know about the water canopy greenhouse, you could go there. You don't have to watch 7.5 hours. This one I don't have the rights to. It's a $200 set, and it's very good, but I don't have the rights to that. This one we do, and so if you want this one, I can't change that price, but if you wanted this one, I can give you this one with it, and that would be okay. Okay, the Garden in a Box is $85 normally, I think. Okay, and it's $65 here. Refractometer, we're going to use this. Refractometer, we're going to use this right away. This particular one, now you can get these all the way from pretty cheap to over $4,000. This particular one retails for $119, and if you want one here, I think I have a total of four here. They're $90 if you want one here. You don't need this to tell you whether food is good or not. You don't, but it'll tell you the Brix reading, but your tongue will tell you if the food is good or not. Your taste buds will tell you that. So. Okay. Oh, weeding tool. This is a very interesting tool. This is invented and manufactured by Darren Greenfield. And I'm going to take this off. Now, this is not a kid's tool. Most weeding tools, you're like this, and your hand gets, your wrist gets very, very tired. So it's like this, and this will cut in all three corners here, all three sides. So you can get very close to a plant and weed with it, and it's far easier than most weeding tools. This is $30, and it's manufactured at Weimar by students there. So you're helping students and Darren by doing this. Okay. Oh, I didn't talk about the sea salt yet. This is a 2-pound package, and here at the workshop, it's $15. If you order it online, it's $22 there. It's $15 if you order it, if you take it home with you here. I would like a volunteer. A volunteer? Come on up. Okay, this is a refractometer, and we're going to squeeze out a bit of juice onto the lens here, and then close it, and then you look towards the light to see what's there. Let's do this. Let's see, I got a knife here someplace. Now, I went to Safeway last night, and I got a number of things there. Okay, so let's do tomatoes. That's an easy one. And those that are in the green bags are certified organic from Safeway. Those that are in the plain bags are very similar to the certified organic, but not organic. So we end up paying probably about twice as much for the certified organic. Okay, let's start with cherry tomatoes. This is certified organic. Let's try it first. Okay, close it up. Just close it up. Now look through the lens and tell me what you see. What he's looking at will be a round circle. Part of it will be blue and part of it will be white. And then there's a scale alongside of it. And we want to read where the two come together. We want to read what that line says. That gives us our Brix reading. Okay, where this is, let's see, this was the organic, and it is right about 5. Right about 5. Look at that. Yeah. Okay, now if you'll go into your handout to this page, Brix readings there. Let's go to tomatoes. There are two sheets of it, so let's go to tomatoes. And what should we be for tomatoes? What's poor?
Four.
Okay. Now what's average?
6.
What did this one Brix for?
5.
5. This is an organic tomato. We pay twice as much for it. It's someplace between, it's less than average and a little above poor there. This says that good is 8. You need at least 7 for a tomato to begin to taste good. And a 12 would be excellent there. So let's go to, this was the organic one. Okay, this is the non-organic one. That one's 3. Okay, non-organic, but it's 3. Let's do organic again. This is the organic, just your regular
Roma tomato
organic there. Okay, so let's see what the organic. Now, we should be organic because it eliminates the poisons. But I'm showing you that we're going to need far more than organic if we're going to get good food. What do we have, Eric? Okay, 3.9. Where are we? We're less than poor for organic. Okay, that was the organic. Okay, now we're going to a non-organic. 3.8. Okay, what was the last one?
3.9. So no difference between organic and non-organic.
No difference. No difference. Why did we pay twice the price for the organic?
You see?
Pesticide, yes. Yes. And that's important. But as far as nutrient value, we're not getting it. Okay, organic, just a large tomato, just a large slicing tomato. Okay, what are we measuring? We're measuring the density of the nutrients in that plant juice. usually that density is equated with higher nutrient value there. Okay, this is 4.5. We got a higher nutrient value off the non-organic there than we did the organic. Okay, now these tomatoes are interesting. They're called
hydroponic.
This is the organic. Yeah, tomatoes on the vine. And used to be that they'd advertised ripen on the vine. Well, they were picked green as everything. And while they were traveling to the market, they're gassed in the truck, and then they turn ripe because of the gas, or they turn red because of the gas. So, yeah, they were ripened on the vine, but
the vine was in the truck.
They've changed their advertising a little bit. 3.4, less than 4 even. Yeah. Organic. Okay, let's go to the non-organic and see if we have anything different there. 3.8, the other one is 3.4, right? So again, the non-organic is a little better. It's still below poor. Let's go to the top of this page where it says honeydew. There, honeydew melons. There. Hang on just a minute here. I gave a seminar at somebody's house down the Central Valley. And Dan Hutton, who is here someplace in the building today, had... Voice is not coming through. I gave the seminar down the Central Valley at somebody's house. Anyway, Dan was... he was a hard customer because he... His degree in college was agriculture, and I kept telling him, he kept telling me he wasn't getting the results that he wants. Now, he's been a professional farmer. He's close to my age, been a professional farmer for a lot of years there, and he didn't want to try these ideas there, particularly the ocean water salts. He didn't like that idea at all. But anyway, I finally convinced him that he ought to try it, at least to, you know, on a small basis there. So he grew honeydew melons. And what's it say an excellent is on there? What's the top of the...
14.
14. Okay. And Dan called me up, and he was so excited. He said, I'm getting honeydew melons at 15, 16, and 17 there. And I said, well, hey, I'm having this little seminar. It's not too terribly far from your house. He said, I'll be there, and I'll bring some melons. So there are about 35 people in that group. And so we cut up some melons and passed it around to people there. There are three people in that group that said, nah, I don't like honeydew melons there. All three of those people said, oh, I could like honeydew melons. And it takes that, yes. Yes, and everybody, I think, there agreed that it was absolutely the best honeydew melon that they had ever tasted. Now, we regularly get honeydews at 15, 16, and 17. We had some in our own garden this year that way. Anyway, off the scale, and you can do that in your own garden. It does take complete nutrition and some of the ocean water there to have that great flavor there. Okay, let's try a grape. See if we've got anything better here. What's it say a table grape should be? Between 8 and 20. Okay.
Good as
16. Okay, let's see what we've got there.
Wow.
22.2.
22.4.
And I tasted it, and it's good. It's sweet. Eric says, could it be that the grape is more ripe than the other fruit? If we had green fruit, it would not be as sweet. But it's the variety that has more to do with it there. Okay, let's try this little tangerine here.
Oh, it's getting me.
Getting you, yeah. Sorry, Eric. Okay, let's try that. Okay, what is a tangerine or orange on there? Average is 12, and we were...
11.2.
So we're about average there. Again, that's just a grocery store thing there. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate that. Okay, we want to get into year-round gardening, the Omega Greenhouse, do-it-yourself backyard greenhouse, and screenhouse-greenhouse combo, simple hoop houses, and then the water canopy greenhouse. So we want to get into all of these things.
I was up in the UP, Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and giving a seminar up there. And the place where I was giving the seminar, the first day that we were there, this is a workshop, so we have some PowerPoint like this inside, and then we go outside and actually do what we're talking about. So we went out and we planted a bunch of plants there, and frost was supposed to come in that night, and it did, but we covered all those plants with 5-gallon buckets so they wouldn't get frosted. Next morning, sure enough, everything was frosted out, but our plants were protected. That was the last frost of the season there. So that kind of gives you an idea there. Now, there were two different men in that audience. Both were doing the same thing, not knowing that each other was doing this. They were both eating out of their gardens. They were both eating carrots and beets and turnips and, you know, root type of vegetables out of their garden. And, hey, that ground freezes 5-6 feet deep there. So how did they do that? If your ground is frozen, you can't dig a carrot out of it. What they did, both of these men were doing the same thing. They would grow those things in the summertime. Okay, so you've got to grow a winter garden in the summer and some into the fall. Now, they have a short growing season compared to us here. Before the hard frost, when you get the first little frost, before the ground freezes, you cover that area with maybe this much leaves, dry leaves or dry straw. Not hay. Hay is full of weed seeds, okay? So dry straw or dry leaves. You cover that whole area. Then you cover it with a tarp that's waterproof, okay? And now you put bricks around the edge or something so that it doesn't fly away in the next wind. And now the winter comes, the snow comes. And as long as you keep it dry, you see there's heat in the ground. The surface of the ground will heat up and cool down the most. And then a little less and a little less and a little less as we go down to about 5.5 feet deep. From 5.5 feet deep down, the ground is at a constant temperature. Now, up there, I think it was probably about 52 degrees or so, constant temperature there. So, as long as we've got this insulating layer above and no water coming in, we get water and it destroys the insulation. Okay? So now it's winter and snow is this deep out there. You go out and you get rid of the snow, shovel it off, pick up that tarp, and you dig down, and the ground is not frozen. And you can have carrots and beets and root vegetables all winter long out of there. Both of these men were just finishing up last year's crop as the first frost was coming in here. Okay? The only way you can get into the soil is if it's not frozen. If it's frozen, you're out of luck there. So that layer of insulation is what did it. It's just straw or leaves and then covered over so no water would get in there, and you could do that. Now, that's the previous winter, they had a week, I think, where every day the temperature was 30 degrees below or lower for a whole week there. As I drove around through that part of the country, I saw lots of trees that were supposedly native to that area that had been killed by the previous year's frost. So you can have some pretty good results, though, if you do it right. Okay, so let's go on to the Omega Greenhouse. Don't know if I have... Okay, Omega Greenhouse. Okay, this avoids the typical greenhouse problems. What are they? Sun comes up and it gets too hot, right? You walk into a greenhouse, doesn't matter if it's the middle of winter, it's too hot. You park your car or truck in the parking lot in the middle of winter, it's a sunny day, and you come back and it's hot, right? That's because of the greenhouse principle. The sun comes in, light comes in, strikes something, and it turns to heat. The heat energy can't escape as fast as the light can come in, and we have that buildup. The Mayago greenhouse at my house, the day before we left, we had a sunny day, and I went out there, and it was 120 degrees at the top of the greenhouse. Now I have it arranged so that we catch that heat and use it. But we use that principle. Okay, so it's too hot when the sun shines. It's too cold. As soon as the sun goes down, the temperature drops to almost the outside temperature, just a few degrees above the outside temperature. Why? Because this is not insulated. See, even if you have double pane or whatever, your heat is just going out there. It's a tremendous energy waster in heating and cooling. And then we have a buildup of chemical fertilizers and salts in the soil, and a buildup of mold and diseases from too much humidity. So we have all these problems in a normal greenhouse there. Matter of fact, as you're driving through the country, when you see greenhouses, big or small, observe, and you'll find that most greenhouses are empty. They're used as extra storage. Too many problems for that. So let's go on. Okay, this is designed and engineered to be warm, warm growing house in the winter, and it's designed to be cool in the summer. It's extremely strong. It'll withstand winds up to 90 miles an hour, holds 40-pound snow load per square foot, and could easily be increased if we need to for extreme conditions. It's lightweight. The side and the roof panels are easily taken down and stored for summer, just as easily reassembled when cold weather threatens. Okay, now there is an Omega greenhouse on the left. And then this is just simple hoop house here. Okay. So we create a 3-foot deep area for the entire floor of the greenhouse. In other words, we are doing the Ellen White planting method in that greenhouse. So if we're digging down 3 feet deep, that's the perfect time to install air circulating system so that we put the heat. We're going to take that 120 degree heat, we're going to put it down into the ground, okay? And it's going to come up at night and on cold and overcast days there. We put a gopher wire in the whole thing so that we don't have gophers in there, and you don't want gophers or any type of mice in there. We line the side with foam insulation. This is foam insulation that will not absorb any water. If it is going to absorb water, you're going to lose the insulation value of that. So we put that on the inside. If we put it on the outside, then mice and other critters will come in and chew it. And even the chickens will come up and put a hole in it. Okay, we line the hole with foam insulation board supported with either cement block, wall, wood, or hardy board. We staple the cloth to the outside of the wood in order to deter rodents. Line the walls with insulating foam and fill the soil in layers in the Ellen White planting method. We're going to go through that tomorrow, and you've got it in your handout also here. Okay, there's the Ellen White planting method. It's in your handout, and you want to use those different layers. This layer and this layer are almost identical. This is your layer of gravel in here. Above that, you want to put that air pipe. You want to put maybe a loose rock on either end, so that air is down here, but you want it to be able to get into the soil there. Okay, this is an area of just plain topsoil here. Now the tree is going to go on top here, and this soil and this soil is very similar. We have for the tree, we have a tree guard. Then we have a layer of minerals here and compost, and then this is a mulch there. Okay, we'll go through that tomorrow, but let's go on here. Okay, A 4-inch or even a 3-inch French drain pipe is placed on that layer of gravel and goes back and forth about 2 feet apart. And one end, we're going to take that and go right to the very top of the greenhouse because that's where hot air is going to go, right? 120 degrees up there. Summertime, it'll easily get to 160 degrees there. So one goes up. The other end, after it goes through the pipe, comes out to the opposite end of the greenhouse, a few inches above ground level. Okay, means you've got to tie something around the top of it so as you're working on this greenhouse, you don't get dirt in there because then it would clog it up there. Okay, this will provide heating and cooling and air to the roots and the microbes. Remember, the more air we get to our plant roots without drying it out, the faster those plants are going to grow. Okay, here is an example. This one was built in Brownsville, California. And this was a big hole here. It was dug out with the tractors. Then the foundation went in. Here's one end of that pipe. This one is going to go clear to the very top. Here's the other end of the pipe right over there. So air is going to go down through that. Okay. Now, make sure that you measure exactly. If you were to get one of these, the factory will give you the exact measurement to the inch and the eighth of an inch even. Make sure that it is done right there. Also, as you work on this, now this has all been filled in. This is 3 foot deep soil here. When you do that, make sure you put down plywood, something so that you don't compact that soil. Right? We go to a lot of trouble to get air into that soil and make it light. Don't walk on it. It's going to compact that soil. Okay. Here we're putting the sides up. And there's one. Let's see. That's the one in my yard there. Okay. Now let's talk about another principle here. Okay, before the flood, in the past history of this world, there was a time when everything grew much bigger and much more vigorous and without disease. Today, this is a 6 foot tall man, and let's say that we made him a 12 foot tall man. This is a 12 foot tall man over there. But we only doubled his weight. He'd be the skinniest, ugliest stick man on earth. Okay? So we have to do the math, and we know we can do that. And when we know, see, we're told that Adam was more than twice the height of men today and well proportioned. So when we make this twice as tall and well proportioned, we end up with a man that weighs more than 2,000 pounds. More than 2,000 pounds. That's 10 times what a big man weighs today. Right? On the side of Mount Ararat, a tomb was discovered. It's called Noah's Tomb. We don't know whether that's Noah or not. We do know that the man in that tomb was 12 feet tall and well proportioned. It was probably Noah or one of his sons there. Somebody from before the flood. There. This shows a shocking difference between the size and proportion of men before the flood and men today. Everything grew healthier, more vigorous, and without disease. Is it possible? Is it possible that if we created some of those conditions that existed before the flood, that we could recapture some of these benefits today? This is another interesting one. This is by proportion. This is drawn as Noah's Ark, 515 feet long. That's taken right out of the Bible from the books of Moses. And today, the largest tree that we have is 379 feet tall. This is a tree over in the Coast Grove and redwood tree in Northern California. That's the largest tree that we know of. Beautiful tree. I've been there and seen it there. Before the flood, it said trees many times bigger there. this tree is so huge here, I have no idea whether this is true or not, but Noah could have cut one tree down and made the ark out of it. All right. Oh, this is a 24-foot long, let's call that a double-wide mobile home or 24-foot-wide home there. That gives you proportion there. Tremendous difference here. This is just 51 feet tall here, 515 feet long there. All right, we're going to look at this shade tree. This is what a big shade tree would look like today, 85 feet tall. This would be a shade tree that would cover about an acre, and this is what trees grew like before the flood. Here's that same 24-foot-wide home, and there's a 6-foot man alongside in there. The water canopy greenhouse. Then God said, I'm going to Genesis 1, 6, and 7, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. Thus God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which are above the firmament. And it was so. There's no water above the firmament today. There might be a little bit in the air, but there's none above the firmament. All of these things fit together perfectly. Does it rain when it's high pressure or low pressure? Low pressure. If we had a layer of water above the air and it encircles the whole earth and we have gravity, it would press down on our atmosphere. So the whole world would be in high pressure constantly. Would it be able to rain or not? Couldn't rain. See those wise men before the flood? They said, this old man Noah, he's out of his mind. It's impossible to rain. They were absolutely right. They just didn't count on God dropping that water canopy there. Okay, so we have worked on this. This is one of my favorite subjects. We've worked on this to make it to make that water canopy a reality. We now have actual architectural drawings that we can build this from. There, let's see. Okay, this is a concept here. Let's say the dream is that we would eventually build houses with water canopies attached. Hot water and hot air go up, cold drops. So this will be the south side of the house where the sun is shining. And so as this heats up, the water goes up and it empties into a big tank on the north wall of the greenhouse. That means that the coldest water in the bottom of the tank now goes over here, and you don't need any pumps, just the sun will make that go around. Don't need any pumps at all. This is the ground prepared the Ellen White method. Here's the layer of rock, and here's the air pipe above that. There are all kinds of benefits that could be had with this. Let's see if we have anything else here. Okay. In Nance Bend, is it Tennessee, western Tennessee? One of these was built. The soil temperature there at a depth of 6 feet, pretty constant at 55 degrees. There, here you can see snow on the outside, and this was Calvin Dent's greenhouse, one of them, and the coldest it ever got inside was about 42 degrees, I think. As soon as I realized or found out that he was building this, I called him, made friends with him on the phone, and I would keep record. I would call him at least every 6 months and talk to him and say, what about this? What's happening? And I would keep records on this. This is 37 feet across. You can see that it is not in a good area. There's lots of shade on that greenhouse. When you make a greenhouse, put it where you're going to have sunlight. Okay. Another thing is that he didn't put any covering above the water. Tried to get him to do that, and he said, oh, Can't do that. This is a foot deep of water there. Well, leaves would drop in there. Occasionally some ducks would come in and swim. So that had to be cleaned out every now and then. And here's a picture on the inside. I was in Honduras, and somebody got me some wonderful papayas, non-GMO, and just some of the sweetest papayas I'd ever eaten. So this was a few years ago, and I did what you're not supposed to do. I dried some of that seed, and I brought it home in my pocket. You can't do that today. You wouldn't get away with it there. But I sent Dr. Dent some of it, and he planted these little peat pots with it in January. He put some on the back of his refrigerator. It's a little warmer inside on the back of the refrigerator. When it got warm enough, he planted 3 in the greenhouse, and he planted 10 in the outside garden. I called him in June and said, "Hey, Calvin, how are those papaya plants doing?" He said, "Oh, they're doing well." He said, "Put 3 in the greenhouse and put 10 outside." And he started to tell me about the 10 outside. They were all up about this high, and they were good color, and he was so pleased with them. I said, "No, Calvin, tell me about the 3 you put in the greenhouse." "Oh," he said, "they're each 6 and 7 feet tall and covered with 72 little green papayas." You can see them in here, just 72 little green papayas there. Again, a tremendous difference in growth there. And we can get that. We've done that. We've done a number of different experiments, and we can do that again here. Okay. Now, that water canopy greenhouse you just saw, it was hard to clean. Dr. Dentz had to get up there and sweep it out and hose it out and whatever every so often. And he just had plain, cheap plastic, clear plastic up there, held up by cement wire. You know, stuff we put in a concrete driveway there. So he had that stapled up there. And, of course, that would be hard to clean. One time he said he decided to use colloidal silver with the idea that it would, that maybe that would take care of the algae. And so when he put that in, everything turned bright red. So he decided to build another one. This one was out of brick, cement block. And now he went and salvaged some big sheets of plastic from a store that they were tearing down in town. And so he would take these big sheets of glass, actually, and it would have to go here and half there and half here and half there, you see, and put them there just right. Again, he put a big piece of plastic now on the bottom of that and then up over the top, and now he filled that with water. Well, this time, because of the glass, he only put 4 inches of water. Not a foot like he had before, only 4 inches of water. Still worked, did not work quite as well as when we had a foot of water in it. Now, when he was well into his 80s, he was up there cleaning it. And you see you've got 3 little windows on side, and on the far side, the whole thing opens up. There's a big door there. Also on the far side, he had a big piano hinges hooked to a big board, and so he could unhook those and drop that, and for a few minutes he had a Niagara Falls dropping off the other side. And then because this is nice and smooth, it was much easier to clean. Could get up there and just hose it down there. Well, but he had to walk on these boards, right, that he had up there. One day, well into his 80s, later 80s, he was walking up there cleaning, and he slipped. And he fell. And he fell through. Broke the glass. He believed in natural methods. And he didn't break any bones. He fell into the soil down below. But he got up, brushed himself off, and said, "Boy, I cannot do this anymore." And took that out of there, took all the glass out, took all the water out. And then he did a polycarbonate, which was, you know, this type of a greenhouse. Now, polycarbonate greenhouses are what the most expensive greenhouses are made of today. Then he called me in the summertime and said, "Lynn, I can't believe this." Said, It's 160 degrees in here, and all those windows are open, and the door on the lower end is wide open, and this thing is half sunk into the ground. You can see how it's sunk into the ground. He thought, well, that'll help to moderate the temperature. He said, it's 160 degrees in here. Okay, you people who have greenhouses now, you're shaking your head. Yeah, 160 degrees there because of the greenhouse principle. So anyway, then in the winter, he called me back. At that time, he said, Lynn, I'm losing my mind. He said, when I left that greenhouse last night, I was sure that I had closed everything up tight. He said, I came back this morning, and everything was dead. Everything had been frozen overnight. See, previously, 42 degrees was the lowest temperature it ever got in his greenhouse. He was used to the water protecting him. Now, with that water gone, everything died in there.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.